Let's talk about it.
Hello and welcome back to a special episode of Thick Radio, the podcast where we talk about gaining, feedism, and everything in their orbit. I'm James.
And I'm Tim, so let's get into it. Today we're welcoming to the show. Today we've got Chris.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, my doll. How are you today?
I'm feeling pretty good. Hungry, but energetic as well.
Hungry, but energetic. I wonder why that could be. Could it have anything to do with today being the first day of Eid, perhaps?
Well, actually, today is the first day of Ramadan. And since I'm a Muslim myself, so Ramadan is period or a month full of when you're doing fasting from dusk to dawn or dawn to dusk. I don't know, like English is my second language, so, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but like we eat very early in the morning, not eating or drinking until the sun set. So yeah, so in where I am right now, which is in Jakarta, my first meal of the day was like 2 hours ago at 6 p.m. and now it's like 8 p.m. here. So I'm still hungry. I still want to nibble on something, but I'm pretty energetic now.
Well, come through this thing. Come on. And, you know, this is a very exciting opportunity for us to explore Ramadan and Eid and a lot of these Islamic celebrations because, you know, obviously, Tim and I were based in the UK, in America. I'm from Australia originally. You know, there's not a lot of press really around what actually happens. What are people doing? Shubada woo, all of it. So I think today is going to be a fantastic opportunity to really unpack some of that and get to know what it is like being a gorgeous, thick, juicy person celebrating a very intimate and religious time. So, Chris, you ready to get into it then?
Yeah. And also, I'm really, really excited to talk about it because, well, first of all, I'm Muslim and my religion, Islam, I think we get a bad PR. Like, people are focusing on the things that is done by a very small, specific people than the rest of us, the majority of Islam. We're just like, we're just your neighbor. We're just living our life. And there's us, you know, living our lives, trying to be a good human being every day. And sometimes we're overseen by bad PR, bad media, you know. And second of all, I am from Jakarta. I live in Southeast Asia, Indonesia. And not a lot of people notice that Indonesia has the most population of Muslim in the world compared to any other countries in the world. But I have no idea why we're not popular, because we could outnumber any other people in the world except China and Russia and the States. But like, yeah, we are like 270 million people right now. 80% of us are Muslim. No one really acknowledges your existence. But so yeah, it's really interesting to see, like, when from the Western point of view, you think of Muslim are coming from North African or Middle East countries, but hey, there's us, like big gangs of Muslims from Southeast Asia that also need some introduction. Yeah, but it's very interesting.
Well, I appreciate that, and welcome to the program to share your experience. We're very much looking forward to it. I mean, I suppose as a first port of call for anyone who is unfamiliar with Eid and Ramadan, I mean, I imagine most people have heard these terms before, but for anyone who's not familiar with them, what is the story behind these events, and why are they so important to the Islamic faith and the Islamic calendar?
Yeah, so disclaimer first that I am just your regular human being. I'm not expert on Islam. I don't think I'm a very good Muslim, but I was born and raised as a Muslim. I did almost all the Muslim should do, you know? So I think I could explain one of two. Ramadan is actually a holy month of Islam where for 29 to 30 days, is depending on when we as a Muslim need to fast. So by fasting mean we need to not eat and drink and hold our lust for a good like 10, 20 hours depending on where you live. The thing is, you need to start fasting or like stop eating, stop drinking at dawn before sunrise, and you can eat and drink starting from when the sun sets. Yeah, you can drink. So during that time, yes, not even water, and of course not eating, and you also need to maintain your lust, your desire to do something lustful. Oh my goodness. That is so difficult to explain in my second language. I hope you guys understand. You got it, right?
Yeah, so it
Okay.
sounds like it's not just abstaining from food and drink, it's also abstaining from sex, from self-pleasure, and potentially even thought, trying to just not to say you can't have moments, but maybe when thoughts enter your mind, it's going, no, I can't think about that right now. I need to think about other things, other more important things.
It seems to me like it's a daily long meditation, right? I mean, you're denying yourself any worldly items, right? Like, so food, water. I mean, but is it also a time where you're encouraged to just sit in introspection, or are you encouraged to be productive during that time period, or?
Yeah, so when you said maybe it's like day long meditation, I did not think of that at all until you say it. And now that you say it, I'm like, yeah, maybe it is a day long meditation. But the thing is, do we like should we like be more like more like self-reflecting, like doing introspection? Yes, actually, in Islam, in your daily life, non-Ramadan, you need to pray 5 times a day, right? And there's no change in that in Ramadan, but there is some special prayer that you could do, and it will be very good for your soul and relationship with God, that you do at night. But it's optional. You can do it or you cannot. And in hope that during this month you're praying more, you manifesting good things more that will come to you. And and also about how we need to like limit ourselves from lust, from sex, from even thinking of it. Let me tell you something, like not eating for 20 hours is nothing compared to not thinking about dirty things in your mind. Oh my God, I am struggling. I could survive not eating for like 20 hours, easy, not thinking about Captain America, about Superman, naked. It's
Yeah,
hard.
I'd be screwed. I'd be screwed because I can't go more than a couple of minutes without thinking about it. So,
Right, so yeah.
goodness me. I mean, I think it's a beautiful thing to learn about because, again, you mentioned that bad press that comes through, and I think a lot of people just kind of look at things askance. But in reality, you've got Jewish holidays that celebrate some form of fasting. You've got, even Christian holidays, while they don't necessarily have a fasting element a lot of the time these days, there's still an element of being reflective, and I don't know, I think it's really interesting to follow a faith and an idea that says, in this period of your day, week, month, etc., take time to pause the earthly, look at the spiritual. Realign yourself with this, focus on this. I mean, From your experience, I know you expressed that maybe you're not the most, I guess you could say, devout Muslim at this stage of your life, but for when you've observed it fully in the past, what is the kind of effect after Eid and Ramadan? Do you feel like there is a realignment of spirit? Do you feel like there is an improvement in some way? What is that experience like for you?
Yeah, so according to the teaching that I was given when I was growing up, one of the main reasons of doing fasting is to test your empathy because there's 100,000 millions of people that are starving every day. So in order to reach your empathy, try to do this too, do the fasting and think about unfortunate people, less fortunate people, and feeling grateful of what you have. And during Ramadan, when I'm really hungry and I'm scrolling through social media and see devastating story about less fortunate children, people in poor condition, that was making me feel like, wow, I am so grateful. I'm voluntarily doing this. And I know that in a couple hours I'll be eating good food. Well, a lot of people might not have that privilege, so it's really increasing my empathy for sure, and also make me thinking about how grateful I am in life compared to other people.
It's interesting. I reflect on, we've done a roundtable now on obesity and religion, and I think what was really something I took away from that experience was not necessarily just the different approaches to faith or rabbinical ideas that people might have had, but ultimately what faith does for us and what we take out of that. And in many ways, those of us who don't align with a specific religion still have spiritual ideals in the world. We have habits, we have, light a candle in remembrance of someone. We have, even what's the white vibe that people complain about now? Like sending good vibes your way, sending good thoughts, good intentions your way. Like that's,
Oh, thoughts and prayers. Is that what
yeah.
you're talking about?
You know what I
Oh.
mean? It's like that is still a spiritual epithet. It's still an intention to say in the amorphous realm of spiritual amorphousness, I am putting positivity in your direction. And I think more of us align with that than what we maybe give credit for. And like I say, what's really quite interesting and lovely to hear about with Ramadan and with Eid is that the intention is not just to say, be chaste and restrict on eating because we want you to feel bad about yourself. It's saying, take this opportunity to reflect on people who don't have what you have. And I would imagine after that point, it maybe drives a sense of charity. It really increases on community. It obliges you to consider the people around you, the people in your life who aren't doing as well. And maybe in a time when you are distracted by hunger and sexual thought, you think, well, what can I do to distract myself from this? Maybe I'll invest in what other people need right now. And that will help me to not think about myself, put myself in the shoes of someone else. And in actual fact, Tim, we've talked about this before. When you get into a really negative self space, the best and easiest way to get out of that is by practicing gratitude. And practicing gratitude is celebrating, I have enough. I'm actually doing quite okay. And so a good way to take myself out of my own funk is to invest in someone else where maybe they are struggling and help lift them up a little.
Sometimes I think this is what they mean by go outside and touch grass. Like ground yourself again. Realize that I think society encourages main character syndrome, and there are so many instances where you just gotta like, no, okay, it's not always about you. It's not like I get it. We're a part of a community that is ridiculously self-indulgent, but there are times when we can put that aside.
Absolutely. I want to ask here, obviously we're talking about Eid and Ramadan together today. Are there any other major important Muslim festivals or Islamic days of importance that we need to be aware of?
Yeah, I think there's two types of Eid which were celebrated greatly in the Muslim community, but each country apparently has different importance on these two Eids. So the first time is Eid al-Adha. Okay, so me coming from Southeast Asia and being a Muslim, we pronounce things in a very specific way than a Muslim in Middle East, North Africa, and in the Western country. So it's hyping, and yeah, when you see it, when you type it, it's EIDADHA, Eid Adha. But we Indonesian Muslim, we call it Idul Adha, which means it's a celebration where we sacrifice goat or cow or camel. We sacrifice them and we give it away to people in need and to be eaten by your family as well. That's the first one. And the second one is Idul Fitr or Idul Fitri in my language, which is the celebration after we fasting for full months. So, but apparently, I've lived in quite different countries now. I've lived in two other Muslim countries, and they apparently in Indonesia, Idul Adha, you only get like 2 day off from the government, but for Idul Fitri, you can get up to like 5 or 7 days off from the government. So obviously, in Indonesia, Idul Fitri is bigger. We celebrate it bigger than Idul Adha, but apparently, in other country, especially in the North Africa, I think Idul Adha, they take it more seriously. I think Idul Adha is where, in Muslim story, is where Abraham was about to sacrifice his child. In my language, we call that child Ismail. But in your, what's in English
I think
term?
it is Ishmael, because I think
Ishmael.
in the Hebrew Bible, I think Abraham's two sons are Isaac and Ishmael. And I think that's meant
Oh,
to
yeah.
be the split where Isaac's children become like the Israelites, and then Ishmael's children become the
The
children.
Canaanites or the no,
Children.
no.
I can't quite remember. It's been a minute now.
Yeah.
Got the Bible.
I haven't done Bible studies since I was in catechumenate classes, and that was when I was like 14, so.
Yeah. So yeah, that's Idul Adha where we sacrifice.
Okay. And to be clear here, I recall that, there's also days of fast, specifically in Jewish faith. You're thinking of Yom Kippur and Lent. Like the question for Lent is, what are you giving up for Lent? Because it's not just necessarily a case of, oh, you're giving up food. It's like, are you giving up smoking? Are you giving up drinking? Are you giving up television? What are you giving up to try and realign your focus in the world and on God and be more in and amongst people? And I don't know. Again, as someone who would not describe themselves as religious these days, I'm not mad at the notion of a period of time in which the obligation is to say, take yourself out of the world you're living in, take a breather, look around you, say hello to a neighbor, reconnect with the universe in your vicinity, and find out how you can contribute to your local human ecosystem, right? But I appreciate learning about all those different holidays. I do want to ask, because I feel like this has to be the this has to be the obvious question with regards to fasting, and we are obviously a podcast about gaining. How do you balance fasting with gain? I mean, look, as a first question, how does it affect your appetite?
How does it affect my appetite? So this is weird because what I remember from years before, my appetite during Ramadan is completely fine. I just don't feel hungry throughout the day. I sometimes feel thirsty, but it comes and go. But today, around like 11 a.m., I already start feeling hungry and I start like, can I eat? But I pushed through and I made it today. So it should be fine. However, I once had a relationship with this feeder guy, hardcore feeder guy, but we were in a long distance relationship. He was living in Norway, I was living in Jakarta a couple of years ago, and he usually sent me food, but like in a very short amount of time, because usually he sent me food like from 7 p.m. my time, 7 p.m. my time to like midnight, so like I'm binging, but during Ramadan, he only can send me food from 7 p.m. until like 9 p.m. because usually after 9:30, I usually just like sleep. I have no idea why, but like I have a good sleep. Even though, and I wake up the next day at like 7 p.m. at 7 a.m. again. So it's weird. It affect more to my sleeping schedule than my appetite.
That's really interesting. I mean, when I reflect on, my gaining journey, and again, as a non-Muslim, I have talked about this on the podcast before that in the summer months in Australia, it gets so hot that I would find it very difficult to eat, period. Like, this is why I would go through weight cycles of gaining some weight and then losing it through the summer, because I would just sweat that bitch out just by functioning in the heat. It was not pleasant. And I would imagine because Jakarta and because Indonesia and, Middle Eastern countries as well, so much more like equatorial, so much more arid in that kind of a sense. I would imagine the heat element is probably a contributing factor where it's like, it's hot anyways. You may not necessarily be thinking about stuffing one's gob in such a time of year. So I think that's really worth considering that, the environment almost contributes, not to say it makes it easier in such a direct sense, but I think it maybe contributes to, well, maybe it does. Maybe it does make things a little easier to process. And so you're thinking like, well, I've got to deal with this anyways. But you did mention that you're also not allowed to drink water, correct?
Yeah, no water, not even water.
Not even water. So from a medical perspective, people who are diabetic, for instance, I know like they've got to eat food, come rain, come shine. I would imagine pregnant women as well. I mean, are there special dispensations given to people who are experiencing these things and potentially other things where they would be allowed to eat food or drink water?
Yeah, definitely, because in Islam, even though all of the, so in Islam, it's like obligation for you to fast. However, if you have medical condition, it's okay for you not to do it, but you should pay it. It's called fidyah. So, for example, when I was pregnant, I pregnant for obviously 9 months, and one of the month I it's Ramadan, and then the year after that, I breastfeed my son, and I don't want to lose the source of the breast milk, which is my food and my metabolism. So I keep eating. And also, I know that my uncle, he got type 2 or type 1 diabetes, so he can't fast. So yeah, I didn't fast. He didn't fast as well, and it's fine. But in Islam, there is a mechanism where when you either you break your fast or you can't fast during that period, you need to give money to people in. Yeah, it's not a lot of money. I think in Indonesia, I think it's around $2 per day, something like that. So yeah, it's, I think it's still good, you know. I still not sure the religious aspect behind it, but think about this, like fasting supposed to be good for me, but if I'm not fasting, I could do good to other people by, you know, giving money for charity. And I think like $1, $2 is not a lot of money. It's pretty doable.
Yeah, because if you total that up daily, for 30 days, that's only like $60.
Yeah.
So.
I think something else that really sticks out to me there is, as you say, like you breastfed your son, that's his food. And as much as, I understand this going through church and that there were a lot of families that even from a young age, they were encouraging kids to engage in worship and in the creche and whatnot. Like that's still a child who isn't able to look after themselves or really able to make decisions for their own sustenance at that point in time. So again, I imagine that there are those exceptions where it's like they are probably too young to at least be obliged to fast in the same way that an adult can choose to fast. You have to go, this is a child who requires something else. And yeah, again, I think this is a really important point to cover because, again, the bad press that you mentioned, these types of things get referenced where people are like, oh, these people who do all these things. And it's like, well, actually, they're looking after their children. They're looking after people who are diabetic and people who are pregnant and people who actually do need their help. It is still encouraged strongly for the people who can opt in and make that decision fully without repercussion, which I think is that makes sense. If that's the observation, do the thing. But wherein exceptions need to be made, of course, it is about the human and making sure that the person is doing okay, which is also part of the point of that charity. If fasting is meant to put your attention on other people, perhaps in those instances, not fasting is still putting your attention on other people, which means you're still making the same spiritually filled observance of caring for another person. It just doesn't look the same, but it doesn't matter because the intent and the outward result is correct.
Oh, this is so nice to hear from your perspective, actually.
Well, I'm glad. I mean, and that comes from a great teacher, truly. But again, I think this is something we talked about in our obesity and religion episode. You know, a lot of this inference that's placed on, you know, and let's say here specifically like religion and fatness, a lot of that expectation is placed on from traditionally racist ideals and ideals that are meant to put people in a certain position of disadvantage. Whereas when it's framed in a certain type of way to uplift people and bring community, I think there can be a beauty to that. We've had this kind of conversation on the podcast as well before. So many groups, like in the leather community, whenever they do charity auctions and fundraisers, it's geared towards the AIDS epidemic and people who have HIV and supporting these groups, right? And potentially as gainers and feedees, if we were to do something similar, it should be in a similar vein, ironically, to Ramadan, where it's choosing maybe to go without food for a bit to actually help someone else who needs a bit of help with food, you know, or maybe it means donating to food pantries or to a stamp system that helps people to access food more easily, you know? I want to ask you here, as, and again, you said that you're not necessarily a full practicing Muslim in such a firm way these days, but from your perspective of things, what can we in the gaining and fetist communities do to show our support for Muslim people observing these rites during Eid and Ramadan? What can we do to support?
That is a very interesting topic because I think this is the very first time someone asked to me about it. Even my ex-boyfriends back then never really asked me. But I guess what to do to support us, maybe just don't say anything about, like, or like just the, when I say something, not only to Peterism community people, but like, to my non-Muslim friend, when I say, yeah, I'm fasting, it's like 17, 20 hours, depending on where you live, no eat, no drinking. And they say, not even water? Like, you know the deal, you know, we're still going to do it anyway. Maybe just treat us like we're just living our life. But also, oh yeah, here's the thing about fasting, your mouth will be stink, really stinky. Very, very sick. Your mouth will smell like trash. So it'll be nice if you like spray a little. To me personally, I would love to hear that because like, yeah, we could like use spray, mouth spray. I don't know if that's allowed or not, but I use that when I want to meet people because my mouth stinks. Yeah, so.
I mean, I would say like a mouth spray or like a mint, like
Man, or some gum.
it's not consumption for nutrient's sake. Like it is just a it's a hygiene thing, or it's a, you know, just sort of a grooming thing, a self-grooming thing, you might say. So I would imagine mouth spray and all that would be perfectly permissible. But I would imagine as well, you know, during Eid and Ramadan, because obviously as gainers and feedies, we love to talk about how hungry we are. We love to talk about the food that we love to eat, all of this, perhaps during such a period. Not to say don't talk about it in such a firm way, but maybe make more of an effort, especially when talking to friends who might be observing, to try other topics of conversation. You know,
Yeah.
maybe don't talk about food, and because of the sex thing, maybe don't talk about, you know, fatness from such a perspective. Maybe make an effort to talk to them about their motivations. Maybe talk about sport, TV. Talk about anything other
Oh,
than.
I know. Yeah, I know what you could do. Maybe when you want to hang out, You might like during Ramadan, I know a lot of Muslim drinking too, but like maybe in Ramadan, next time, ask your friend, your Muslim friend to hang out, maybe go to non-bar place or like during the day. Maybe if you guys want to meet, you guys could hang out in each other's house, but not in like, hey, let's go to restaurant, because if they're fasting, they can't do anything in there. Maybe library or park or somewhere. And also at night, maybe not going to bar if they don't ask. Not like asking, hey, let's go to the bar. I think that would be pretty respectful.
I was just going to say, and I hope that this doesn't come off as potentially ignorant, but it's like when I think about like not eating for that long, I think about getting hangry. When you're really hungry, you just start getting pissed off at everything. You are just ready to like get out of my way. I'm hungry, and I've never had to do this. I've never like there's I'm not part of a religion that observes this, and it's not really like a thing that is promoted over here to like go that long, fasting. So, like, I mean, how do you deal with it? Like, do you get hangry? Do you get to that point where you're like, God, I just want to eat something?
I think everyone has their own phase of hunger, I guess. To me personally, when I'm hungry, I just want to lay down and like sleep and nap and not do anything. But sometimes when you push too hard, I'll be like very, very angry. Not because you're being such a bitch, but I'm just hungry, and I need my food. But I think from what I see in Indonesia, people just tend to get like hangry. When they're not hangry after like 1 p.m., they would be just like on their chair feeling sleepy. So actually having a busy work day really helped to make the time pass faster during Ramadan.
That makes sense. So when it comes to the meals, right? And I understand that, this is a time of fasting, and I apologize if meal discussion is not helpful for you in this moment. But for anyone listening, I understand that, there is a sort of a traditional meal that people have before sunrise and after sunset. What are those meals called, and what's like a traditional dish that you would have for each meal?
All right, yeah, so the eating before sunrise, we call it suhoor, and your meal at sunset, we call it iftar. So in suhoor, every country has their own different food, but in Indonesia, mind you that we Indonesian, we eat hearty food, period. Like when you people in Western country, where you have breakfast with cereal or toast. No, we eat fried rice, we eat fried noodle. So yeah, we treat suhoor or like the pre-fasting meal same as our breakfast. But usually because it's very busy in the morning, because in Indonesia it would be like 3 to 4 a.m. So whoever prepares the food, it's probably left over from last night or like something easy like fried rice with eggs sunny side up, or fried noodle, indomie. Do you know indomie, guys? Nope, no indomie. Oh, you're missing out. Indomie is like Indonesian instant noodle, Indonesian ramen. So good. It's really fast to make. Delicious. Yeah, so we eat that for suhoor. But even though a lot of doctors or nutritionists said that it's not really nice when you just wake up at like 3 a.m. and you eat hearty food and then you go back to sleep. It's not necessarily the nice thing for your body, but hey, that's just how we roll. That's how Indonesian breakfast and make it sahur for Indonesian. So yeah, that's that for sahur. And for iftar, oh, this is so fun because in Indonesia, like 20 years ago, I believe, there's this company who sell iced tea in the box. They really racked up their sales during Ramadan, and they make this slogan that completely changed our iftar meal until now. And what they said is, do iftar with sweet stuff. So usually after iftar, or when iftar time comes, we will eat sweet stuff first. Iced tea. We make a very fun dessert first. So yeah, dessert first before main course. Fritters, like banana fritters, vegetable fritters, we eat that as a snack.
Ooh, pineapple fritters?
No, we don't make that. Is
Oh.
that a thing in Australia?
Yeah, pineapple fritter, mate. Oh my God. So like, sorry, not to derail here, but like if you go to like an Aussie fish and chip place, obviously you'll get like battered fish, fried chips, sausages and bits and pieces like that. But depending on the place, you could get a fritter done. And yes, there's banana fritters, but like a pineapple fritter, oh God. I mean, it's literally a ring of pineapple dunked in the batter, deep fried, and it is just like this ultimate like crunch but sweet. And because you're like, pineapple, it's not like the most firm flesh, but like after it's been deep fried, it goes like a little bit jammy. So it's like you've got this like hot deep fried dust of cinnamon or powdered sugar or something, and like you bite into it and it's just like this like hot, sweet, jammy, crispy with the cinnamon and num 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 num. So friggin' good. But banana fritters, also fan-fucking-tastic. Tell me more.
Oh my God. Pineapple fritters. I think I'm gonna make that. That sounds delicious just the way you say it. Yeah, I've never thought about that. Well, Indonesian people in general are not really big on dessert, but suddenly in Ramadan, dessert first before for eating the main course, which also I think it's because during the fasting time we lose all of our sugar level, glucose level, whatever it is. So, taking something sweet is good to help with our metabolism, like fruit. Yeah, but mostly like dessert, fun dessert. Like we call it fruit soup, sop buah,
Food
fruit
soup.
soup. Yeah. So it's basically condensed milk with all the fruits that you could think of, like strawberry, mango. Paya, longan, lychee, whatever you put in there, mix in with condensed milk. And if you want, you can put melon syrup or pomegranate syrup. Not like fresh syrup, but like sugary syrup. I don't think you guys have that in there, but like it just like.
I think that we can get like grenadine is pomegranate syrup. So like if you go to your local grocery store and look for like cocktail mixers, just get grenadine because I think that's the same thing.
I guess, yeah, mocktail mixer in this case. Yeah, something like that.
But
Yeah,
also,
it's really.
I was about to say like you can't stop a Southeast Asian person from like cracking into a tin of condensed milk. Like I don't know. What happened to y'all? But like,
Well, because you couldn't get cows over there once upon. I mean, you could, but I'm sure that the cows that were there were, if they weren't being used for meat, then they had to be used for milk, and then it had to be shipped to the other islands. So the only way to, like, that's why you find in, on like island cuisine, if milk is used, it's usually condensed, because that was the only way they could get it over there at the time.
I did see a really interesting recipe, and call me crazy, but I was curious. Like, I think I might try this. It was like a milkshake that this person made, where it was like avocado and condensed milk to make the actual like creaminess of the shake. Like, I think they called it like a butter shake, which was interesting because like there's no butter in it, but obviously avocado is kind of like a butter consistency.
Yeah, that would be a pretty buttery flavor.
Yeah, it was avocado and condensed milk, but then they also put like fresh fruit in it and stuff like that and mix it around. They put some ice in there. And I was like, I might actually try that.
Well, so actually, funny that you mentioned that because I grew up in Indonesia my whole life. I traveled to other countries when I was like 19, but before that, all I know is that avocado is a sweet food because there are three main juices in Indonesia: orange juice, mango juice, avocado juice. And it's exactly what you just said. It's avocado, put some condensed milk in there, put it on a blender, and there you go. You got avocado juice, and it's pretty standard here. And it's a sweet stuff.
That sounds kind of fattening too. I was just like, the
Yeah.
whole avocado with some condensed milk.
I should think so, because an avocado is calorie dense, and then condensed milk is like, milk on steroids. So.
Well, actually, that's a good question, Tim. Do you know if like condensed milk? I mean, I don't know what like the lactose situation is in condensed milk, but like
I
because
don't know either, to be completely
oh.
honest. And as someone who is lactose intolerant now, I don't know if that would benefit me.
So don't worry, condensed milk is not milk, so you're good to go, Tim. It's
Oh,
just
is it?
sugar.
Yeah, it
Sugar.
is just mostly sugar.
Because it's the way that they make it into condensed milk. Like it's a sugar, it's a part of the refining process that I believe kills off some of the lactose. I imagine, like, all things that are meant to be, like, made originally from milk but are now lactose free still have some trace elements, right? So I would imagine that it probably still has some amount of lactose in it, but I would imagine not to near to the extent that typical milk does. So, I mean, maybe we need to try that, Tim, like an avocado milkshake recipe, because goddamn.
I gotta go to the grocery store after this, so I'll try it.
Dig it up and let us know what you think.
Yeah. And by the way, thinking about what Tim just said, I don't think the problem of Indonesian is about the cow and in which like why we don't use real milk. I think because it's cheaper to get a can of condensed milk, because one can of condensed milk is like $1 and we can turn it to like a couple gallons of milk.
Because you mix it with other things, you help spread it out, also
Yeah.
long life, so it sits in the pantry.
Yeah, but like cow milk, like same $1, but just like here, one glass of milk. So yeah, I think it's because we're cheap.
Frugal, baby, you're frugal. That's what you do.
Frugal, not cheap.
Not cheap,
Frugal.
frugal, baby, frugal. Now, I'm curious to ask, right? We've got iftar and sugar. These meals that happen dawn at dusk. In typical, like, Western holidays, there's always, like, when families come together, you will get the whisperings of who is gonna make what. In my family, there is always the inevitable moment of, is she making that spadata? Because I thought I was making the spadata. Everybody knows my spadata is the best. And if she makes it, everyone's going to want to kill themselves because it's not my spadata. So I'm curious, in a similar vein and fashion, does this happen in Muslim households where people are like, don't touch it, so and so is gonna make it, and that there's this like rivalry? Does that happen?
Well, I think in Indonesia, every house make their own meal. So you come to this auntie's house, then you're gonna eat their food. You don't bring your food. I don't know why. Now that you said it, it's gonna make sense. Yeah, in the Western world, I guess people more like doing potluck, but in Indonesia, we make food. You come, and then we will go to your house to eat your food, like that. Yeah, interesting. And usually, in iftar or oh, no, in eat, the food is really curry-like food, and we eat it with rice cake. It's a diamond-shaped rice cake called tupat. So yeah,
Nice.
it's weird. I have no idea why it's diamond-shaped, but it's wrapped with coconut leaf, actually. And it's the side dish would be curry. Curry like.
So, as we're coming near the end of the episode, I want to ask, kind of reflecting on that post-Eid Ramadan time period, like, what does that do for you in terms of, like, needs for sleep, needs for nourishment? Is there like a theme that tends to happen with that?
Yeah, so I think when okay, on the Eid day is the day that we celebrate Ramadan. After we finish fasting for Ramadan for like 30 days or so, we celebrate with Eid. And usually, in the fairly early in the morning, we go to mosque, we pray together, and after that, we eat a big meal, like all the curries and all the rice cakes and all the cookies. And by the way, Indonesian cookies during Ramadan, I thought it was great until my partner said that, my American partner said that, this is your cookies? It's so dry. It's so dry. And then I realized that, oh my goodness, my lovely Eid cookies, like all of them, I swear, all of them, they're super dry. Yeah, but for some reason, Indonesian like it. Anyway, so after Eid prayer in the morning, I think we're done around like 7 or 8 a.m. And then That will be our very first meal during the daytime after like a month. So we feast hard, we eat a lot of food, we go to different families' houses and we eat food there too, and cookies and everything. And then by the time we come home around like 10 a.m. or 10 a.m. or like 11 a.m., we will just nap, like nap time, because we're too full, too tired, and then we usually wake up again at 3 p.m. It's like post-eat nap. It's really popular, but that just only happened during eat day. A couple of days after that, suddenly it's just another day. It's interesting to me that Ramadan, for those 30 days, is really my body start to adapt. It really changed the way I operate my world, and then there's Eid, 2 days, 3 days of Eid, and suddenly it's just another day. It's interesting how fast that could be, and how we thought, hey, this good habit will last, but not so much.
So, as a final question here, I want to ask you, Chris, what do you want to see out of Eid and Ramadan in the future?
I think what Eid and Ramadan that we have right now is still very perfect and beautiful. And I hope that in the future, with AI and with more fast-paced environment and everything, it's not really changing. Like, in the world that is so fastly changing, there's Ramadan, there's Eid. It's very special and dear to lots of Muslim. And it's nice to have something nice like this that we could doing and celebrating over and over again for the next years coming.
That's fantastic. This has been, I think, a really enlightening episode. And really, Chris, we just want to say a huge thank you to you for giving your time today, during Eid, to share with your experiences, to take time to sit with us, and to educate our listeners on something that they maybe didn't know about beforehand. So thank you.
Welcome. It's really nice to share it with you guys too.
Wonderful. Now, where can our listeners find you online?
I think you don't have, I think it's just like keep it for us.
No worries. You can't find her anywhere, people. She's all for us, and you can't have any. Deal with it. But that's it for another special episode here on Thick Radio. Please remember to like and subscribe, rate us 5 stars, and leave us a good review. If you liked this episode, the podcast, or just us in general, please share it with your friends and encourage them to tune in. You can find me on Instagram and Blue Sky at Stanham.
And you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok at Thicky Mouse. You can also look us up on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok at Thick Radio, or at our website at podpage.com/thickradio. If you want to submit a voice note or become a financial supporter of the show, you can find the links in the show notes, and you can always write to us at thethickradio@gmail.com. So until next time, bye, fats.
Bye, fats.
Bye, fats.
Let's talk about it.
Thick Radio is a Patreon and Anchor app podcast produced by Stan and Dickie Mouse.
Mixed and mastered by Stan.
Our artwork is provided by Loki 2.
Our theme song is provided by Bonfire Cream.